Ball hit deep in the left center field. Wise back. Makes the catch!
What a play!
Wade Wise makes the catch! What a play by Wise! Mercy!
This is the Shoeless Goat Podcast.
Brent Brown drops the ball!
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of the Shoeless Goat Podcast. If you are wondering why you're hearing my voice and not my usual partner, Nick Anton's, that's because he went out to the desert in New Mexico to try to find himself. Obviously disappointed with how the Cubs baseball went this week. So I'm trading him in for another week. And this week I am joined by Nick Phillips of Go With The Flow fame, another member from our stable of creators at San Chicago. So Nick, how's it going?
Good, Patrick. Thanks for having me on. As much as I am a hockey guy, I'm also diehard Cubs fan, so I feel competent enough to contribute to the show this week in lieu of the other Nick's absence. So excited to come in with some fire barrel takes. Obviously not the start Cub fans were hoping for. I don't think there was a ton of expectations coming in this year. You know, Vegas over under of 79.5 wins, which is looking like a pretty accurate number, I'd say. They're probably pegging to finish a hair under 500, but it's not been an ideal start. The Mets sweep was interesting, but since then things have kind of gone sour a little bit. So excited to hear your takes on the Sox, even chip in there a little bit. Interested to hear your perspective on the other team in town, the Cubbies, right now, because there's definitely a number one and number two, pretty clear cut right now. I have to admit it, you know.
I was going to say, last week I wasn't so sure about my passing of the torch claim, but I'm getting more and more confident now, even though the injury bug bit again. But we'll get into all that. And, you know, everybody has a role to play, so this is probably a good week for the fire and brimstone to come on. But I guess, you know, we'll save that for a little bit later. We'll get started with a recap of, like we always do each week, we'll go through the weekly recap for both teams. I'll start with the Sox this week. Overall, not a bad week. Went 3-3, leaving them at 15-12 overall in second place in the division. 1.5 back of the preseason favorite Kansas City Royals, and 4.5 up on the Twins. Probably more important in the long run. Started off the week against the Tigers at home, which had about as big a shift in different days as you can get. On Monday, they lost a real ugly game 5-2, grounded into 4 double plays as a team, with Grandal having 2 of those, 0-for-13 with runners in scoring possession. Tigers had 5 errors, basically handed them the game on the platter. Didn't work out that way. Giolito was left in possibly too long, giving up a home run to Nico Goodrum, and that pretty much, you know, managerial offense couldn't get it done. Went from there, though, to sweeping a doubleheader on Thursday, winning games 3-1 and 11-0, so a much better day, obviously. Carlos Rodon outdueled Casey Mize in game 1, and game 2 was a desperately needed blowout win, getting homers from Yoan Moncada and Yermin Mercedes. And Dylan Cease, perhaps most importantly, and I'll get into him a little bit later, went 7 shutout innings with 9 strikeouts and no walks, which is something he has never been anywhere close to doing, so that was great to see. From there, moved into a pretty important series, at least in the minds of fans, against the Indians, a team we've struggled with for a number of years now. Friday night lost what looked up to be a pitcher's duel between Dallas Keuchel and Shane Bieber. You got 3 runs off Shane Bieber, but ultimately you'd hope that might be enough. Probably can't hope for much more, but it wasn't. They lost 5-3. Saturday, Lance Lynn finally made his return. Didn't pitch great, but the Sox got the job done, winning 7-3. Interestingly enough, through 3 innings, they had 5 runs without a single ball hit in play. In the 3 true outcomes since, they had 4 walks, 9 strikeouts, and a grand slam from Tim Anderson. So a wild start to that game, but ultimately were able to pull out the win. And then today, Sunday, another ugly game to wrap up the week. Zach Plesac finally got the best of the Sox. Previous 2 times they had faced him, they got 12 earned off of him, so he was due for 1 here. Not going to win many games at all when you only get 4 hits. Giolito, again, looked good, but not really, didn't take up the ace mantle that you would expect from him. And Luis Robert left the game with an injury in the first inning, so just overall not a great game today. But like I said, you're 3 games over 500 this early in the year. You have the second best run differential in the American League, and the only team in the NL above you is the Dodgers. Not great, but you know, 15-12 is not a bad place to be at this point in the season.
Yeah, thanks, Pat. So decent week for the Sox. Hey, chugging away. For the Cubbies, overall this week, I would describe it to be a shit show. Certainly hectic. certainly hectic. There was a lot going on, like just for a week of baseball. So record-wise, they went 2-5. They had a four-game series down in Atlanta, good old Cobb County in the suburbs down there. And the first three games were tough. They lost 8-7 the first one. Then they had a 20-inning scoreless drought. They lost 5-0 and then 10-0 back-to-back nights Tuesday and Wednesday. The 10-0 game, as you probably had the misfortune, if you're a Cub fan, of seeing replayed far too much, in my opinion, was Anthony Rizzo coming into the 10-0 game on Wednesday night. Struck out Freddie Freeman, which got, you know, social media a buzz. But in my opinion, you know, you shouldn't be celebrating getting your ass kicked, especially when your season's been mostly down so far this year. It's been a pretty it's been a below average start, and the record would agree with me there. It's just one of those things where it's one thing if you're in the grind of a 162-game season and, you know, you're in the middle of July, you're 10 games up in first, and, you know, you just have a bad day at the office and you're getting your butt whipped a little bit and it's the first game of a series and you want to save your bullpen. But, yeah, throw in a position player. We're not going to be mad. All right, we're 9 games up in the division instead of 10. When you have had the start that they've had this year, especially with, you know, they're like Jekyll and Hyde. They either score a boatload of runs like they did on Sunday. Today they lost 13-12 in 10 innings. I'll get into that in a second. But they've had a few games where they've exploded offensively, but they've had numerous times where they've been shut out. Dating back to last Sunday, they got shut out by the Brewers, and then they had back-to-back shutouts in Atlanta. So, I mean, just in a week span, they've been shut out 3 times. So this team is certainly up and down. It's pretty much black or white at the plate right now. So they did get on the win column on Thursday in Atlanta, getaway day. They won that game 9-3. And then really the pitching just was, you know, not ideal for the most part this weekend. Arrieta had a little bit of a tough outing. Nice bounce back on Saturday with a 3-2 win, but then they lost 13-12 in the 10th inning. A lot happened in Cincinnati this weekend. We had Amir Garrett screaming at Yellen and making hand gestures at Anthony Rizzo, to which Javi Baez then hurdled the dugout rail and then ended up flicking off, giving Amir Garrett the bird. Cubs and the Reds have had some weird beef, but like this precedes the Garrett era. I mean, one time Anthony Rizzo challenged Aroldis Chapman and their entire dugout in 2014. Javi and Garrett kind of got into it in 2019. And then I don't know what Anthony Rizzo did. Like, I didn't see. I don't know why Amir Garrett was so, you know, colorful, let's say, on the mound with, like, just, like, his actions and the hand gestures and just yelling at him. Like, he's just – it was quite the scene. And then Javi just was like, F you, man, middle finger. Whole, you know, whole 9 yards. But also – in Cincinnati on Sunday, we had a couple things. Well, Ian Happ and Nico Horner getting a collision. David Ross said that Happ's in good spirits. Horner stayed in the game, but what happened was they were out of position players. Arrieta had to come in and hit in the 10th inning. He strikes out with guys on second and third. They, you know, Cincinnati gets a base runner, you know, at second base, obviously, with the rules they implemented in 2020. And, you know, they get Kimbrel and Contreras got crossed up. Base runner ends up at third base. And Castellanos had been 4-for-4 at the plate. And it was a 3-1 count. And for whatever reason, I don't know what David Ross is thinking. A guy's 4-for-4 and it's a 3-run count. Or it's a runner on third, 3-1 count. The guy's been 4-for-4. For some inexplicable reason, they gave Castellanos a hittable pitch instead of just putting him on the first base. And he hit like a little seeing eye single, a little looper, ends the game. So I thought a poor managerial decision. Obviously, the pitching's the biggest letdown of that game. And really, the pitching's been rough the last week or so. Hendricks got lit up again by Atlanta. So he's had two very, very bad starts. If folks may remember, he gave up 4 home runs in the first inning on a Sunday night baseball game earlier this season to Atlanta. So, you know, the pitching was a letdown, surrendering 13 runs. I mean, I obviously getting a base runner inherited there and the 9th isn't easy, but was very puzzled by David Ross's decision to pitch to Castellanos there. Just put him on, you know, maybe even load the bases, right? And just get a force everywhere. I thought it was honestly just kind of showed his youth as a manager at this point. Like, that wasn't his best moment, I would say.
Yeah, well, you know, Nick, that's what you get when you don't have a Hall of Fame baseball person, man on the bench for your side. You know, you need that experience that knows when it's time to put Lourdes Garcia and Jake Lamb out there in left field. That's what it's all about when you're coming from the bench. I think one thing we got to remember, though, the first thing I thought when I saw the Amir Garrett brouhaha, if you will, go down, is that he was the dude that tried to fight the entire Pirates dugout by himself 2 years ago. So he's not backing down. I think Cubs side probably just some frustration boiling over. I always find it ironic when a guy like Javi's playing fun police out there, but you know, who knows? And I guess that down week, that's just how it goes in some of these situations.
Yeah, and you want the wildest part too, not to jump in again, but Amir Garrett had entering that appearance where he got, you know, struck Rizzo out and celebrated it. His ERA was over 12. And I know it's early in the season, but like that guy's been off to a terrible start himself. And he's a good reliever. Like he's respectable. Like he's had a good couple last seasons. Like he's well thought of in that bullpen. I think he's probably the most well thought of member of the Reds bullpen, but his 2021 early returns aren't that good. So for a guy with a 12.27 ERA to just go after a guy like Rizzo, and I get your point, honestly, about Baez. I mean, he's, you know, bat flipping and, you know, not running the first base all the time. And, you know, he setting a poor example for fundamentals and teaching our youth, right? No, I'm kidding.
Gotta play the right way.
We love Javi, but yeah, he certainly shouldn't be playing fun place. But yeah, I think it's a little aggressive and to just be screaming at Rizzo. Like, I'm not going to pretend I was at the game or, you know, I have a hot mic that no one else has access to. Like, Rizzo certainly could have done something to warrant some sort of, you know, celebration by Garrett, but it seemed a little excessive for who, like, Rizzo's not a guy who's showing up the opponent usually. Like, he's a guy that pretty much carries himself in a quote unquote, and I know you're going to laugh, like, classy way. Like, he's just
like,
head down, work hard, you know.
Got his hat on straight, not tilted anywhere on the side.
Yeah. No Pedro Strope hat tilt going on with him. But, I don't know. It was just weird. It's like, why Rizzo of all people? Like, I don't know. Are you just that pumped that you struck out a really good first baseman? Like, I don't know. But, and it's like, hey, man, like, you're a lefty. You're a pretty dominant lefty when you're on. Like, you know, the matchup there is in your favor anyway. So, but I don't know if that whole thought process is going on when you're on the mound and your adrenaline's going. But, man, you did your job. Congrats. But I don't know why you'd show up a guy like Rizzo. I get being pissed at, like, someone like Javi, especially if he pimped a home run or something earlier in the game. But, I don't know. Whatever. It's over. And then the Reds manager said, like, we don't give a shit what anyone thinks about our organization or any individual player. So they seem to,
you know, the first professional baseball franchise, really, they care about the reputation over there. So I guess turning the page to a little bit more of a brighter topic, we'll go into our weekly players of the week. I'll start off with the Sox. So for me, it's kind of tough to pick one this week. Every week before this, it was pretty much extremely obvious. We had Yermín Mercedes doing MVP things the first week, Carlos Rodon throwing no hitters the second week, and then Yermín Mercedes being really good again last week. So for me, this week, it was Dylan Cease. He only pitched one game, but it was probably one of the more promising starts of his career. After a few starts in a row of not getting out of the fifth inning, it finally looked like he turned a corner through a seven-inning complete game, so got the Mad Bum Mickey Mouse complete game shutout there. Nine strikeouts, but more importantly to me, no walks. He had at least three in every prior start this year. Threw 91 pitches, 66 for strikes, so a better percentage there, and a season-high 15 swinging strikes. The thing with him is he's always had the stuff, you know, it's always just been he can't put it together. If this White Sox team is going to go far, especially with these injuries, they need a guy like Dylan Cease to go out there and actually take up the ball every fifth day. At least somewhat quiet the calls for Michael Kopech to come out of the bullpen while he's still, you know, rehabbing and on an innings limit. Maybe not rehabbing isn't the right word there, but I think ultimately how far the Sox go this year, a guy like Dylan Cease is going to be incredibly important. Maybe not in the playoffs, but getting there, you're going to need to win 90 plus games. You're not getting there with a fifth starter that can't get out of the fifth inning. So simply put, Dylan Cease with what he showed, easily the player of the week for me.
Just what I love to hear as a Cub fan. No, Dylan Cease, the afterthought, some would say, obviously not the prize prospect in the return for Jose Quintana. Everyone was obviously fixated on getting Eloy back in that trade, but, you know, Cease has proven to be a nice, I wouldn't call it a throw-in, but he was certainly a nice piece to have included in that trade. And, you know, obviously happy for the guy to, you know, have some success, but that, that trade is going to, you know, obviously continue to haunt the Cubs for a little bit, especially when you replace Kyle Schwarber in left field with a guy who's basically just a different guy, but damn near, you know, high strikeout rate, all that fun stuff. Hits the occasional home run, but and jock. But for me, speak positively about the Cubs. Actually really surprised. You know, you didn't know about this guy coming into the year. Obviously, he's had a pretty, you know, illustrious career with the Cubs, but the shoulder injuries, you know, the power numbers were down last year in that shortened season. You know, trade rumors all off season, you know, with the lack of an extension, you know, we didn't know what we were going to get from Chris Bryant. I mean, Sunday, especially, and then just throughout the whole week, he's just continued to have a nice start to the season. So a lot of us on the north side will joke that, you know, he's obviously, if they do trade him, he's doing a nice job lifting his trade value before the deadline, if the Cubs aren't in a position to make a run in the fall. And, you know, if they don't plan on extending him at some point. But he is now hitting this season in 91 at bats. He's got, or actually, no, this isn't updated, but I know he leads. I think he's hitting over 300. He's got 9 home runs, which is tied for the MLB lead. And he also has 19 extra base hits. He's got an OPS that's north of 1.000. So he is having a nice start to the season. It was hard to think, you know, hard to imagine him having a worse season than last year, because that was obviously, you know, I don't know if he was not feeling 100% or the COVID situation, or just, you know, only having 60 games and maybe being in a rut, not having like the 162 games that like find your way out of it and like hit your way out of it. But he's certainly having a much better start to 2021 than anything we saw last year. Like the power was almost non-existent with him last year, and the power seems to be back, and he's really the only Cubs position player at the plate that's been consistent this whole year. Pretty much you look across the board and everyone's numbers are south of their, you know, career averages. So nice to see KB having, I don't want to call it a full bounce back year, but if it keeps up, that's exactly what it's going to be. I mean, he's probably going to make the All-Star game. He's probably their, you know, every team needs to have a representative. I think he's far and away the best Cub so far this year. So another strong week for him. He had a double and 2 home runs on Sunday. So I'm going to go with KB.
Yeah, definitely not a bad pick. I think the interesting thing with him is that, like, going into free agency, I have no idea where to handicap what kind of contract he's going to get. Because if he looks like 2015, 2016 again this year, that completely throws whatever calculus was being done the last 2 years out of proportion. He looked at one point like a $300 million guy. Obviously, that ain't going to happen. Nobody's going to give him that. But he looks like this. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
My hunch right now is 4 or 5 years and annual average value somewhere between 20 to 23 million. I think there's a team that could conceivably give him 500 or, you know, 5 years, 110, something like that. I think he'll be more concerned about term than, you know, he getting an extra year obviously is going to be important for him. And he's a guy, you know, he's a tall, lanky guy, 6'5". Like, I think he'll be a quality defender, but maybe not a bad guy, maybe not bad to go to the AL, just because you don't know how he's, you know, once, you know, you hit 30, you don't really know if that part of your game is going to, you know, nosedive a little bit. So, I mean, for his sake, he potentially could look into the AL, but I would say he's making a strong case to be extended if he wants to remain a Chicago Cub. I mean, a lot of the guys who are due extensions, I mean, are they guys that you really want to extend? They got some guys they need to pay, but are they guys you need to pay? The question is, and the issue that the Cubs have run into is there's arguably a couple guys they may have hung on to too long, where there was a time where they could have gotten some peak trade value. But then they hung on to them, and now it's like, okay, we're going to try to just do a last dance thing and try to win with all of them versus getting something back for them. So you saw that what they got back for Yu Darvish. That was more of like a cap dump type deal. They end up dealing him at the deadline. You know, obviously if he's having an all-star type season and the team that acquires him is confident in getting an extension done, the Cubs could probably get a better return for KB that they did for Darvish potentially. But the whole thing with the trade deadline, Pat, I don't know if you'd agree with this, with the new wild card format has like fucking destroyed what teams can get back at the trade deadline. Because unless you're a clear cut division winner, like runaway division leader, if you're going for a wild card spot, you don't want to give up a top prospect and lose like a freaking wild card game. You have one game, you lose it, your season's over. So really the only teams that are going to be semi-aggressive at the deadline, this goes for this year, and it goes for as long as they have this format, like unless you're like a clear-cut runaway division winner, you're not going to get wild card. Teams that think there's a chance they'll end up in that wild card game are not going to give up anything substantial at the deadline. Like we've seen some freaking hauls, you know, since the, you know, in the past few decades. And like, I think those days are almost pretty much over. I've seen, you know, it's, you're going to get the best return for a player in the off season. Like it's not going to happen at the deadline anymore. I think this format has destroyed that. So a little bit of a random note, but that's my thought there.
Yeah. I get where you're going with that. I think kind of like to your point, well, last year, I guess was an anomaly because there was nobody that was really that far out of it, just threw out the whole thing out of whack. But yeah, I mean, like, especially now where prospects are becoming the most valued currency in baseball, definitely going to change how the teams operate there. I was going to say, I did think that, getting into my big story, that Rick Hahn needed to get on the phone with Jed Hoyer to see what Chris Bryant would cost. I probably got a little bit ahead of myself once the news came out a little bit more, so I guess this is a good point to segue in. Moving into just some of the big stories of the week for the White Sox, I didn't know what I was going to talk about here. It was probably going to be complaining about Tony La Russa or something along those lines. And then Luis Robert got hurt today, and that kind of changed everything. On video, the play looked really bad. I was listening on the radio, and then Hurdy went down, so I raced in to kind of see what was going on TV. So after, like, this is minutes later, and he's still getting carried off the field. So I figured, this is bad. He's done for the year. Him and Eloy are just gone. According to the team, though, it's a hip flexor strain. He's going to be reevaluated tomorrow. Based off a quick Google search, it looks like severe ones of those take about 6 weeks to recover for. So if that's the case, it's bad, but it's not devastating. You can certainly recover from that. However, though, Luis Robert's importance to the team really can't be understated. This year so far, he's almost at one war. He's about a 32% above average hitter in terms of WRC+. He doesn't have the home runs yet. He's only got one, but he's hitting over 300. His whiff rate is down about 8%, and his strikeout rate's down about 7%. And defensively, we all know what he brings to the table. With Eloy, there was a thought when he got hurt, you could replace him with a couple bats that would put some dents in those home run numbers. But you don't have anybody walking through the door that's going to replace both those guys. I mean, basically, you're down to Lurie Garcia, Billy Hamilton, and Adam Engel, and he's not even back yet from injury. So, oh, and you got your first base prospect playing left. So that's another thing. But
man, that's such a – I mean, it's hard to expect your bench players to be anywhere near the quality of those guys. But that's a severe dip in OPS, power, all that good stuff. I mean, that's a – I mean, you're basically going from two, like, pretty – Freak of natures. I mean, especially Robert with like how fast he is and how much pop he has on his bat. Like Eloy's a bad defender, as we've seen him basically sacrifice himself multiple times to the left field wall. He's given himself up multiple times. But you know, I feel bad for the guy, but don't mean to joke about that. But yeah, like going from Robert to Billy, like that changes everything. Like you're missing. It, like shuffles the whole lineup. Like you know, obviously you can't. None of those guys you're gonna plug into their spot in the lineup. Like you're moving guys, you know, you got to move guys up in the lineup because you can't have Billy Hamilton or I feel like you can't have Angle, Hamilton or Lurie hitting in the middle of the lineup. Like those are guys that are hitting at highest in the line. I mean, honestly, three guys that you probably don't want anywhere outside of 7 through 9.
No, yeah. I mean, Angle's looked like he started to turn a corner last year, a little bit better against left-handed pitching, but like, I mean, we saw it with Eloy. It kind of changed the way the roster was constructed. You went from having Jonathan Lucroy as like an expected backup catcher to needing every ounce of offense, which led to Yermín Mercedes becoming the everyday DH. And I mean, that worked out. How long it'll last for, we don't know. But the thing with Robert is you don't have like nobody can give you everything what he does. There's nobody that's going to come in and hit anywhere close to the power he has. Defensively, I guess Angle's close, but it's just the combination of what he offers. Even if he's not hitting, he's a two war player because he's one of the best defensive players in baseball. Just brutal. Yeah. And again, like I've heard some people talk about depth here, but like not even the Dodgers. You can't replace two guys like that in your lineup. No team in baseball is built to replace that. It's just, kind of an unfortunate way the injury bug has decided to bite the Sox this year with the first year, first 162 game year of the window really being open. It's just real tough break. Hopefully it's closer to that 3 to 6 weeks, but until we know more, it just kind of sucks to be stuck in this purgatory.
Would you agree with this, Pat, that this might be the window of time? Eloy being out the whole year, but this potential, let's call it like 4 to 6 weeks maybe, with Robert being out, fair to say that this might be the window for Minnesota to try to jump back into the division race? Like, this might be their window to make up some games in the standings on them? I know everyone's behind Kansas City, but I don't think anyone thinks Kansas City's built to last. Yeah, they're not built to last. But.
No, that's a good point. I was actually going to mention that because it's – I think that having that 4.5 game cushion on Minnesota right now is extremely important because basically, I mean, if he's out for an extended period of time, until Abreu and Moncada really get going, until Grandal, I mean, he's been abysmal outside of getting walks, get going. I think the thought has to basically change at that point from being an offense that can outslug everybody to run prevention. I think that's probably why you're seeing Billy Hamilton play more, Adam Engel when he's back. There's different ways to win a ball game, but I think you're going to start seeing a lot more plays for that defensive, just trying to limit runs just because you don't really got another choice at this point.
Yeah, for sure. And then just on the Cubs side, if you're finished with your Sox storylines, I kind of ran through them when I went through like how the last week went. But I mean, the storyline, it's basically the Cubs are Jekyll and Hyde at the plate. And obviously the pitching's not where you want the staff to be. At this point, some down outings from some guys that you definitely expect a lot better from. So right now, I mean, they're sitting at 12-16. They're 5 games behind Milwaukee. I mean, Pittsburgh looked like a freaking AAA team on paper this year. To be behind them at this point is kind of sad. I mean, the storylines, I mean, you had Javi, like I mentioned earlier, just again, Javi and Garrett getting into it. Ian Happ getting in a collision. But like I said earlier, Rossi said he's in good spirits. I'm trying to think if anything did I mention. Oh, Atlanta was just the whole Rizzo thing, and I ranted about like how he came in. But yeah, I mean that you go 20 innings without a run in Atlanta, you know, then you have a benches clearing potential brawl, and then you have Horner and Happ, two guys who are potentially part of the solution with the Cubs getting in a collision. Thank God. Nothing too serious, it doesn't sound like, came out of that. So just a down week. You go 2-5, you're in last place. Inconsistency in the lineup, but consistently bad in the starting pitching department. So you know, you try to put a smile on your face and you try to be fun, but you know, you gotta call a spade, and they're just not a good baseball team right now. They certainly have some pieces to figure it out. I don't think this team's probably going to win a division. I don't think even if they get in the playoffs, they're built to go deep. But I think there's a happy medium between thinking this is a World Series contender, but also thinking that they're underachieving a little bit. I think they're better on paper, and they have the talent to be better than what they're playing like right now, but they can't seem to all put it together in the same game. It's like when the lineup's good, you get a bad performance out of the rotation. When you have a starter do well, it seems like they're not getting run support. So they really just haven't put – there was like one game against Milwaukee where Hendricks started where he gave up a couple runs and they scored like 14th at plate. And like that's like the complete opposite end of the spectrum. But just that was one of maybe a handful of games this year where they really like put it all together and all facets of the machine were running. So just not great.
That's the one thing I feel like I'm still getting used to myself here is that we're going from having 60 games where, I don't know, as much as we heard it last year, is 2.7 times more important. Going back to – 162 is such a recalibration of expectations where like it's just it feels weird because everything feels like it's gonna be more urgent, but because right now we're about halfway, we would have been halfway through last season by now.
For the Cubs though, I think they have time to figure out in the sense that it's 162 game season, but with the contract situations of some guys on their roster, it's like almost like they need to figure it out by the deadline. Like are we just sending it all in for one last run? I mean, not that they – and I'm not saying that they would be buyers at the trade deadline, but you know what I'm saying? Like as far as they're not going to have a fire sale if they're in striking distance of a wild card spot or a division. I think they probably as an organization, I think they want the fans to enjoy one last run with some of the guys. But if they – I mean, you keep – if every 28 games you're going 4 games under 500 by the time the trade deadline rolls around in July, you're probably going to just have to sell. So, yes, you're right. It's a recalibration of expectations, but I'd say for the Cubs specifically, it's a little smaller of a window to figure it out because you got the trade deadline looming. And, you know, this isn't a team that's going to win a title this year. I hate to break it to people, but it would be amazing, but it won't happen. So we'll see. Long way to go. Unfortunately, Nick will be back to update everyone along the way, the other Nick, as we move along here. So, yeah, it's 28 games in. I'm not, like, hitting the panic button, but, you know, it'd be a lot. I mean, the Sox had way higher expectations than the Cubs, as they deserve to. I mean, they got better this offseason. They made a couple shrewd moves. I mean, I like the Eaton signing was pretty good. Interesting that the organization welcomed him back after didn't seem like he had the most graceful exit, if that's fair to say, his first stint. And then, obviously, the Lance Lynn trade is exciting. So what are your thoughts on Lynn so far? I don't think I've really had a chance to catch too much of him so far, but I feel like he's doing pretty well.
Yeah, when he's been healthy, he's been as advertised. I think his first two – I know opening day home opener, he went complete game shutout, which was the first one in the major leagues of the year. Second game, he didn't quite get to the complete game, but he did, I think he was the first White Sox player to ever get 10-plus strikeouts and no walks in his first two starts of the season. So a pretty good start. He was hurt for, I think, about a week, 10 days. But so as long as he stays healthy, he's going to be as advertised. I would say right now he's probably – I mean, right now, Carlos Rodon's pitching like the ace. But I would say realistically right now, I'd put Lynn is probably the two in the rotation behind Giolito until something happens. But he's definitely pitched his way into that top two of the rotation. So come playoff time – having Lance Lynn out there on the hill and not having to go through nine relievers in an elimination game because your starting rotation breaks down after the first two, it's going to be pretty nice if we get to that point.
Yeah, and Pat, just one more thing too on the Cubs side that I wanted to bring up, and I just talked about how it was a bad week for the team. Hard for me to see things getting too much better in the short run. The Dodgers come to town. Patrick and I will actually be at the park on Monday night. And the pitching matchups, my goodness, not good for the Cubs. The Cubs ran into it's going to be Kyle Hendricks against Walker Buehler, Adbert Alzolay against Clayton Kershaw, and then Jake Arrieta against Trevor Bauer. So we ran into the top three of the Dodgers rotation. So we'll see. Hopefully the winds blow – or I don't know. Wind's blowing out, I guess, would be what I'm hoping for. I'm thinking about their lineup's so filthy in LA too. It's like you just either way, like you're either their pitching's
going to be ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to say it, but I mean, I would honestly right now, I might just take 1-2. Like if you tell me they can
get
one
out of there. Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's got sweep written all over it. But they're at home. So, but if they win one, I'd like to be at the game they win. So hopefully it's Monday night, but, as a degenerate gambler, I think Dodger money line. I mean, it's probably going to be something absurd, like -250 or something. But you want to throw that? If you any of those games, folks at home, if you want to toss that in for some extra juice, bringing in the spread. I'm also part of spread option group, so just bringing it full circle. You want to toss Dodgers money line in to add some extra juice to that parlay? Any of you potential gamblers have at home? I think it's not a bad because this lineup has shown it will shit itself against a good pitcher. Like Brandon Woodruff has completely owned them this year, for example. Would not hesitate at all for a Dodgers money line. So I don't know if I was clear about that, but I'm not expecting good. But then they get Pittsburgh. So that
all evens out.
Yeah, they got to play Pittsburgh after that. So I don't know if you and Nick, Pat, usually do like a little look ahead, but yeah, probably pretty important that they take care of business in those three games, Friday through Sunday against Pittsburgh, because you have those three very difficult and talented pitchers you're facing Monday through Wednesday. And then Tuesday through Sunday, they're on the road. They have an off day on Thursday, but they got two in Cleveland and three on the road in Detroit. Do I think Cleveland and Detroit are World Series contenders? Do I think they're world beaters? No, but I mean, you got a five-game roadie. So I really think for the Cubs, just as like a look ahead, it's important for them to probably win two out of three or sweep Pittsburgh if they really want to stay in semi-respectable striking distance, because I have a feeling they're going to lose some ground in the standings against L.A. and they're going to need a strong series against Pittsburgh to make up for that and to, you know, and in anticipation of a five-game road trip. So a little look ahead there.
Yeah, I guess that gauntlet you're getting against the Dodgers is kind of lady luck come swinging back in the other direction after missing DeGrom with the Mets. But guess that brings us into our last segment of the show. This is our no-hitter draft for those of you who may not remember. Me and the other Nick started this a couple weeks back, where each week we are drafting a new pitcher to our teams. Whichever person's team has a pitcher throw a no-hitter first, the loser has to wear a jersey of the other team to a game. So if one of Nick's pitchers gets a no-hitter, I got to wear a Cubs jersey to a Sox game, vice versa. So, Nick, I'm going to let you go ahead and pick for the other Nick this week. I get the honors. Hopefully, you know, you're on the Cubs side too, so just do your worst.
Yeah, I'm kind of emotionally hedging in a way here because this guy's actually going to face the Cubs somewhat soon. It's Shane Bieber. He's had some super gaudy strikeout numbers this year. I mean, he's had it two or three, I can remember, double-digit strikeout performances just off the top of my head. I know he had a nice performance against the White Sox recently, didn't he?
He has looked very good against us this year.
Yeah, so – and I actually saw him pitch this year in person against the Sox. But he's got pitching matchups coming up against just in the interim on Wednesday at Kansas City and then at home against the Cubs. So in a game where he'll be getting plenty of run support. So, I mean, the reason I'm picking him, I don't know if you usually dive into the rationale at all, but I think the Royals and Cubs are – two teams that are decent candidates to be no hit. At some point, the thought of, oh my God, the Cubs might get no hit this year has run through my head like four or five games. Like they've been honestly playing with fire in that regard. So that's part of it. But Bieber's getting a lot of swing and misses. I mean, and I feel like the best way to throw a no hitter, right, is limit how much the ball's in play. And when you got stuff like he does and you get those swings and misses and you're having games and you're racking up, you know, between 10 and 13 strikeouts, like that's going to give you the best odds. So I don't know if you usually dip into the rationale, but I'm going to go with Shane Bieber for those reasons.
Not a bad pick. Yeah, he certainly looked good against the White Sox. So I hope a no-hitter would not come against them with all the swing and miss maybe. But so then just as a quick recap, so that makes Nick's team so far, Casey Mize. Man, I am forgetting who he took last week. Oh, yeah, Zach Wheeler, who scared me throwing a one-hit game. That was very frightening on my end. And now –
Hey, Butcher, I'm going to add a little wrinkle to it. So
yeah, go ahead.
Since the pitcher you pick this week particularly throws a no-no, you can make me drink something terrible or something like pick a beer. But Bohan, for those who don't follow him on Twitter, you should. He's an absolute electric factory on his personal Twitter. The mayor of 509. He started his hashtag Victory Modelos. So the next time, if Bieber throws a no-no this year, the first Cubs win after his no-no, we're going to have you do a victory old style for the Cubs. So
I'll take that bet. I basically just come, hopefully hedging that mine ends up winning. But we'll
you see can come up with something small but funny for me if you'd like, if your guy throws a no-no.
I'll take some time to think about it. It makes me kind of want to pick Walker Buehler for tomorrow, but I won't go that far.
You can just record my fucking face tomorrow. You want to know something? I have actually seen a no-hitter in person. I was at the Cole Hamels no-hitter at Wrigley. That would have been 2015? Something like that.
Carlos Rodon was my first.
Oh, yeah. That's right. You were there. And
horrible.
I just didn't the hit-by-pitch. Like it clearly hit him. He tried to get out of the way.
I was in the back row of the stadium. I couldn't see anything. Terrible view.
Did they not show it on the board?
They probably did. I was going for the headset asking them to review it, but
like, I get being upset that like that happened, but like the dude wasn't trying to.
No,
take
it wasn't the Jose Tabata where he just threw his elbow in front of it against Scherzer.
How about who was it? Conforto this year on the Mets with that hit by pitch at the end of the game, that the extra inning one where he like intentionally stuck his elbow. I don't want to slander anybody, but it was the Mets, like, won a bullshit game on a hit-by-pitch this year against the Marlins. And then they reviewed it, and they still got it wrong. And that's actually – I don't want to rant again, but real quick, Pope, I got to get your take on this. We know human error is part of the game. They've expanded instant replay. You have challenges. The frustration for me, and I don't know how you feel about this. I don't know how much of a traditionalist you are as far as umpires and technology goes, but it seems like this year the umps have always been like kind of bad. Like obviously they're not going to be perfect when you got pitch framing and the ball's coming that fast out of the hand and you know there's bang bang plays. Like I get it. My frustration is you have the technology to get everything right And in the instances where you're utilizing instant replay, I've seen instances where you've had the benefit and the luxury of slowing the play down so slow, and you have HD and you still get it wrong. It's like, if we're going to have instant replay, how are we getting it wrong even after the review? Like, that's where I get nuts. And the ball strike calls this year have been really bad from what I've noticed. Like, the zone is huge this year. It's like that who was the guy? Was it – I am blanking. So, Levon Hernandez, that playoff game against Atlanta where they like, expanded against the Braves. Like, it's not been that bad, but it's close. Like, the home plate umps this year have been the worst I've seen, I think, since I've been watching baseball. But not trying to exaggerate how bad they are. I know it's a difficult job, but the instant replay and just the home plate umpires this year, I feel like they could be doing a lot better job. But that's just my take.
Yeah, replay, I think my thing is, like, if I could have the choice to not have replay or have this, I would rather not have replay. Like you said, I mean, the calls where it's blatantly wrong and it gets upheld make no sense. The things I don't like about it, though, is that just baseball especially, you can slow things down to a microsecond. If you can't figure out a review in 60 seconds, the play's not overturned. Like, it's not clear and obvious then. And then my thing, too, that I hate, and this is just, I don't want to go on for too long, but I could go on for replay for a while, is like a player sliding into a base and their hand pops off for like a third of a second. Like that's, or the area the bag plays at second base. Like, it's all these things that have been, you know, there's no way the human eye can see that. So I don't know. I don't like it. I've seen too many times.
Yeah, I hate that call with the guy popping off. I mean, it's gotta be like super egregious. Like, you've slide over the bag. Yeah. Like, it's one of those things, like, once you touch the base, you shouldn't necessarily be safe. Like, you gotta, but like, when if your hand pops off for a millisecond, it's like,
yeah, you can't see
it's
that.
It's like
in real
the equivalent of like football. If like a cornerback or a safety is drifting on the ball and he makes the interception within the 5 yard or the 1 yard line and his momentum carries him into the end zone, they don't throw. I mean, it's not a safety for the defensive team.
Exactly.
Like, they're just going to spot the ball where he, because they know it's impossible for that player to have stopped himself before crossing that threshold. So I feel like the pop off thing, it's like, I mean, what do you want guys to do? Like,
yeah.
I mean, for me, I hate that. It drives me nuts. Like, obviously, there's times where it benefits your team, but like, when you have a guy swipe a bag and then they're like, oh, there was a millisecond where it's like, okay.
I mean, you
like,
can challenge pretty much any consequential steal of second base. You just throw the challenge on.
Yeah. Well, that home plate review, too, this year, that Sunday night, the Phillies with the guy, the home plate, that was wild. That was such a long review, and we still don't know if that was correct or not. And I don't know. Just this year, it seems like, I'm not trying to give umps a hard time. You know, my team's doing plenty of things to beat themselves to begin with. So I'm not trying to – I don't think there's been a ton of situations where I've really felt like the Cubs have been, you know, jobbed or something. But I don't know. Just wanted to call it out. I'm hoping our boys in blue pick it up there.
Well, so we'll see how it goes once the Hollywood Doyers come to town. Anyways, to get us back to where we were in this segment, for my part of no-hitter draft, I am going with Marcus Stroman. I've kind of gone the route of picking the dominant strikeout pitcher, so Corbin Burnes and Jake DeGrom. So this week I'm going more the pitch-to-contact, kind of under-the-radar guy. So Stroman, for me, limits barrels. He doesn't walk a lot of guys, has a pretty good chase rate, and has a good mix of pitches with his cutter, slider, and sinker. And he plays in the NL East. You're going to get that Marlins offense when they inevitably cool off. So for me, he's my pick there. I don't have a ton of rationale. I'm just going, you know, more. I want the more average, not average, you know, slightly above average, middle of the road pitcher. So that's my pick for this week.
And underrated part of his game, guy just drips swag.
Oh, easily. I'd love that guy in Chicago, but unfortunately, he took the qualifying offer.
Well, there's always after this year.
Hey, Rickon always gets his guy. So that'll be my pick. We'll see how that continues to go out. That is the last segment of our show, so we'll be wrapping up there. Nick, I want to thank you for taking the time to hop on with me. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun. I'm happy to fill in anytime. So I would have to say that my appearance here to fill an opening was better than having Jake Arrieta hit in the 10th inning. Today. So I think I did a better job pinch hitting today than Jake, but that's not Jake's fault. That's wow. What can I say about this team this year? They, you know, it's like I didn't have – what's that meme going around right now? Like, my expectations were low, but holy shit, that's the Cubs this year. That's what the Cubs are this year. It's like we're thinking second, third place maybe, but to be behind the Pirates right now is disgusting.
Well, as a proponent of the universal DH, if you had that, you wouldn't have had to have Jake Arrieta pinch hitting, but I digress.
And it's always great to watch Nick Castellanos go 5 for 5 with a walk-off hit, 2 home runs against you because you supposedly don't have enough money under the mattress when you own your own TV network and you own every business around the stadium.
Hey, completely changing a neighborhood costs a lot.
What's that?
Completely changing a neighborhood of a city costs a lot of money.
It does, but they're printing it back. But
alas. Well, that'll wrap us up for this week. A lot of fire and brimstone. Hopefully both sides of town can get a little bit better next week, but we'll see how that goes. It's going to be a rough run in LA. Hopefully next week we're coming back with some greener pasture. So if you want to take a listen to us, we're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on SantChicago.com, where you can read any of the other blogs we got. So that'll wrap up our show. Go Cubs, go White Sox, go MLB. And to quote Nick for this one, Yadi Molina is not a Hall of Famer. Have a good week. Same old